Welcome to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast exploring the world of work and how creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, and rule breakers infuse their daily lives with creativity and curiosity. How do you pitch yourself and your business to podcasts you want to be a guest on, people you want to connect with, and companies you want to bring into your network? By taking the courageous step and shamelessly sending the email or making the call. Today's guest did that after hearing an earlier episode of Getting Work to Work with Rachel Allen. Solveig Petsch is a strategic brand consultant and creative director providing remarkable branding for the quietly rebellious. In our conversation, we talk about the importance of sending shameless pitches and the difference between courage and confidence. She shares what a brand is and how it's different than branding, what it takes to build a standout brand, why we choose generic values instead of those that will help us stand apart, and why it's okay to want to keep changing the world. Show notes for this episode can be found at gwtw.co/774. While you're there, you'll also find the entire podcast archive, links to the short documentary series and weekly newsletter, and the latest merch to show your love and support of the show. Well, Solveig, welcome to Getting Work to Work. It is an absolute pleasure to talk with you today.
Well, thank you so much for having me after my shameless pitch.
Well, I like how you described it. It's like, where would we be if we didn't shameless pitch ourselves?
This is true. I'm trying to live by that.
Do you struggle with that, though?
Sometimes. It can be hard to put yourself out there, can't it? Especially when, you know, the good old inner critic tends to raise their voice as well. So, but I'm getting better at it, and I'm getting better the older I'm getting. So
well, I'm asking because, like, I struggle myself with setting pitches, and even though I know I should, and it's just like, I like what you just said, though, the inner critic gets really loud sometimes. And, yeah, just like sometimes I just want to tell my inner critic to go take a hike.
I learned a trick once and I've adopted it, and I'll share it if you want. Probably not in the spirit of the episode at all, but you can edit it out if need be. But someone said to me once, if you imagine that your inner critic is there just trying to help you, you know, they're trying to be helpful, they're trying to protect you from harm, then it's a little bit easier. And then you can just say to them, hey, I know, you know, you're just trying to help, but it's okay. I've got this. And then that makes it easier. So
I like that. See, this is totally in line with the episode, because I think when we can be kind to ourselves, then we can get our work to work.
Yes, indeed. So we wrap up now, right?
Oh, yeah, we're done. I mean, yeah, done. We just encompassed, you know, millennia of human wisdom in 59, 2 minutes.
Wonderful.
Wonderful. We're done. Well, I love asking this question of everyone I talk with, and it's, what are you endlessly curious about?
Oh, you know what? When I saw that question that you, because you sent me that through, I was like, oh, this is such a difficult question to answer. Because, like, what am I not curious about? But I've landed on, I think the thing I'm most curious about is people, you know, like, what's going on inside their heads, what they're thinking about, what they're dreaming about. And this is going to sound so bad, but I'm especially curious about what's going on in the minds of, you know, narrow-minded people, or people that I really disagree deeply with, or that reject science. And I just want to know, you know, their reasoning and what it's like to be so convinced that they have it right, you know, and they have it right and the others have it all wrong. And like, how did they arrive at that conclusion? And my husband and I have been, you know, really drawn into watching cult documentaries lately. I think that's, yes. That's kind of playing into that curiosity. I find it so fascinating, terrifying, but fascinating. And then I guess to just balance it out, because that sounded really sort of doom and gloom, I'm also curious about more pleasant things about people, you know, like their culture, different cultures, different traditions, especially related to food and, learning how to cook different cuisines, curious about exploring new flavors and that. And I just, like, after having this little sort of thought party in my head, I narrowed it down to that. You know what? It somehow all just seems to boil down to people, people and their lived experiences, really.
Yeah. Not to emphasize the doom and gloom, but like, I think we should probably spend a little bit more time analyzing cult behavior and cult mentality, because like, we see it everywhere now, and sometimes we just don't recognize it. I mean, we see it in the way brands are built. We see it in the way people relate to companies and products. Not just religion and politics, just everything now seems to have this, if you're not a cult business, you know, are you really a business?
I know. And I see it a lot, in especially in the online business space, like a lot of the tactics that are used. You know, if you've watched those documentaries and then you go and sort of analyze some of the behaviors and the tactics that are used in online business by some of the big players, you're like, oh, holy crap. This is scary to see how similar online business and cults are. So that's a rabbit hole we could go down into.
Rabbit holes are the best. So
indeed.
You are a brand specialist, or would you call yourself a brand specialist?
Yeah, for the longest time, I used to actually just describe what I did. And I said, I'm a brand strategist and identity designer. But I've pivoted lately, and I now title myself strategic brand consultant and creative director, because that's really what I do. Work with my clients sort of on a higher level to help them figure it all out.
Nice. Because there's a lot when it comes to brands. Like in 2024, what all encompasses the word brand?
Oh, that's not a big question at all. How long did you want this episode to go on for?
As long as it will record.
It's a big question. And I'm wondering whether I should perhaps try to answer it with some more questions, because what I want to ask in return is like, okay, what is it that makes someone pay more for your thing than what they'd pay for a practically sort of identical product from someone else? You know, what is it that makes someone click with your brand enough to be drawn to you and choose you over probably like thousands of other options that are available to them? And it's feelings. Like a brand is about feelings and about how you make those people feel so that they're attracted to you. Your brand, it's not your logo, it's not your colors. I mean, that's part of what you do as branding, to try and steer people's perceptions of your brand. But really, it's emotions in someone's mind. Like, that's been shaped by all of the times and all of the places where people have come across your brand. Easy, huh?
I love answering a question with a question. But what you came to was about feelings. And like, I love that answer a lot, because I don't know if I've heard it described that way, that succinctly before. Like, they often focus on like, oh, it's the how people think about you. But I like the feeling touch.
Yeah.
I like that.
No, and it's like, some people, when they think of branding, they think of the logo and the colors and all of the tangible things that you can actually see, but they're just a part of the bigger picture. So I try to help people understand the difference between a brand and branding. And so a brand is, you know, that collection of feelings that people have about you and what they think about you. And branding is everything that you do to try and influence how people feel about your brand. And your logo and your colors, they're part of your brand's visual identity, which is a part of branding, but only one small part, because you've got all these other elements of it as well. You know, customer experience, you've got your tone of voice, and you've got your values and how you live those values out, you know, how you act in the world. And so really, what most people think about when they think of a brand is just a tiny little sliver of it.
And yet I feel like with brand and branding that we collectively here, you know, because I make this mistake all the time, is that I'll take a tiny portion of what I think it is. Like, let's take a logo, for example, and I'll magnify that to be the main thing and then forget all the other things. Or conversely, I'll take like, well, you know, I need to be like everyone else. So I'm going to do things that make me a little more like everyone else, but I'll do it just a little bit more better. That's great grammar there. and then I'll really stand out because I'm like what people know, but I'm a little bit better.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah. But I feel like that's what we do, though, is we don't take in the whole picture.
Yeah, and but it's so easy as well. And for people who aren't used to working with branding and the stuff that's below the surface, it's the low-hanging fruit. You can see it. Your logo, you can see it. Your visual identity, you can see it. The copy, you know, you can read it and you can make sense of it because it's there and it's tangible. But all of the things that influence that, they're invisible. Like they're inside you, or they exist internally in your like company. But they are what inform what you see. If things are working how they're supposed to do, you've got your brand foundations and then they inform all your outward facing communications. But a lot of people start with the visual stuff because it's easy. And I don't blame them.
Is that where you started?
Not really. But I've made my mistakes as well. So where I started when I started this business, you don't even want to see my first logo because I was so, I don't know, I was so conditioned into thinking that I had to be in a certain way to get the clients that I wanted, that I thought I wanted, that everybody else thought I should have, that I kind of ignored everything I know about branding and did it wrong. So, yeah, do as I say, don't do as I do, at least not like in the beginning, because it took a little while to find that confidence to think, well, hang on a second, this isn't me. What is me? How should I portray myself? Like, what is my brand? Who are the people I want to work with rather than the people everyone else seemed to think that I should work with?
I love the emphasis on the word confidence, but I also heard the word courage represented in the choice made to then be more like yourself. Like, how do confidence and courage work together?
Oh, I think courage has to come first. And then once you've been courageous and you've put yourself out there as your true self and started to see the effects of that, then slowly the confidence will come because you will see that it works.
Oftentimes, I feel like I have to be confident in order to take the courageous act. And I think we tend to do that sometimes with creativity and curiosity. It's like, okay, I had to in the past have an entire plan to know that something was going to work out. And then once the plan was in place, then I would take the courage a step. But I just love what you just said about courage comes first.
But like, it's not our fault, you know, it's the system. It's the way that the system is rigged. We're all conditioned from a very young age to conform to society and all of the norms and what exactly those norms are. That's going to be different depending on like the culture that you're raised in. But I mean, in what we like to call the Western world, there are structures in place that are put there to make sure that we don't stray too far off the capitalist path, for instance, or structures that are there, they're put into place deliberately to make sure that the people who have power still get to keep that power. And as we're growing up, we kind of lose sight of who we really are. And, you know, society rewards and celebrates those who stay within the lines somehow and mocks, I don't know if that's the right word, but maybe like punishes those who don't in a way. And I know I'm generalizing now, but I think you get my drift and where I'm getting at. We're kind of so used to being told how to behave and how to present ourselves that we've forgotten what it looks like to stay true to us.
At what point did you decide to make that decision to be true to yourself and start to position yourself to be you as opposed to who you thought you needed to be?
Well, I think the process has been going on my whole life, like little by little, just like it's been grating on me, because pretending to be someone who you're not is exhausting. It really is. And it takes a lot of mental capacity to put on that facade. But I think what did it for me? So back in 2016, I was made to leave my agency that I co-founded. And that was a pivotal moment. I was like, sod this. I want to do it my way now. So I wanted to do it my way, but I still felt trapped, you know, by what people were expecting me to do and how they were expecting me to behave. And I don't think it was until a year or two in that I was like, hang on a minute. So I left what was a very typical sort of corporate role, even though I was one of the founders. And I said I wanted to do this my way. And here I am, and I'm still working and behaving and acting as if I was still employed. What the actual heck? And that's when I really thought I need to sit down, I need to think about what I want and to stop worrying so much about maybe pissing some people off or not meeting their expectations, because their expectations are not really my responsibility.
Yeah. I mean, that's a battle in and of itself to be able to make that change.
Yeah. But you know, the good thing though is, but the minute you start to let the guard drop and the mask drop, that's when you start attracting the right people. So that was when I did that, that's when I started finding the people online that would become my support network and the like-minded business owners that were also doing things their way and that were values aligned and that I felt a connection with, a deep connection with. And that network is just growing and growing and growing because I'm now presenting myself as me instead of this constructed, very professional, quote unquote, brand.
For people that are hearing this conversation right now, and I'll take on the avatar of the person who has presented themselves in a way that, well, in order to be seen as professional, I have to act this way. But now they're hearing this other message of like, well, maybe that's not really getting you or serving you anymore. Where does the process of change begin? Because it's not just like, okay, I'm going to be myself now and I'm going to show up exactly as I am. I mean, there's probably some steps to take between what you're going to end up being and where you're at as a people-pleasing corporate Borg mentality.
It's going to take a while. And I think that's the first thing that you need to take into account. You need to be okay with the fact that this is a process and you might actually never be done with it completely. It's an evolution, right? Not a revolution. But I think start within yourself and like, am I happy? Am I happy doing the work that I'm doing? Am I happy working with the clients that I have? If I'm not happy, what is it that's making me unhappy about it? And how can I start to change that? And then figure out where the line goes for you, because this is individual. Where does the line go between personal and private? Because just because you're going to put more of you out there to represent your brand doesn't mean that you need to air your dirty laundry. No, but you get to decide.
Right.
What's okay to share and what's not, and what you want to keep private. So, for instance, if you go on a nice holiday with your family, you might share some photos of the beautiful scenery or the lovely hotel that you're in or the food that you're eating, and it's all looking like nice. But then you have this big fat argument with your spouse. You perhaps don't post about that on Instagram.
Oh. Can just feel the awkwardness in that.
It's not a lived experience. It's purely an example. Let me just make that clear.
No, I think that's excellent advice too, because like I'll look at some content creators and they share everything. And it's just like I don't even know. Like I could never be like that. Or conversely, people think I have to be like that. like the expectation is I have to share about the fight with my spouse in order to like be seen as a valid content creator. And I like what you're saying though. It's like, what is that line for you?
Yeah. And also not just for you, but maybe like also your family. Like I'm very conscious about, I don't share a lot about my kids. I can share that I have kids and I can maybe share that. Like if there's a big milestone, I'll maybe say, oh, my son's moving this autumn. I mean, that's not, you know, it's not really a private thing. I'm not exposing him in any way because nobody knows who he is because there's not any photos of him on my business social media. And likewise with my daughter, I'm like, people don't need to see their faces and to know what they had for dinner or to know that she had a big tantrum or whatever. That has nothing to do with my business. But for some people, knowing that, you know, I have a family and like that helps them to see that maybe we're aligned in terms of values and where we are in our life. So there's a line there that I don't want to step across.
So in that process, you're defining that line between personal and private. Where is the conversation around personal brand versus business brand? Is that next in the process or is that also an evolving part of the process?
No, I think it's an evolution as well. And I think we do that less and less now, the whole separation of business brand and personal brand or like, and I think we're realizing that at the end of the day, we're all human beings, right? And that's the one thing that we all have in common, whether we're the, you know, you might be the CEO of a big global corporation, or maybe you're just like an employee in a tiny company, or you're a member of the royal family, or you're like whatever. The work that we do just happens to be one part of that whole human that we are. So I'm not saying that you can't build a faceless brand because you absolutely can, but I think that to completely separate our work from who we are at the core, nah, I don't think we can do that. And I don't think we should either. I think it's good to show that we're human in all aspects of our lives.
Well, and I think that is also how we differentiate ourselves from AI, where AI kind of doubles down on the fact that we're not human and that it can generate stuff without emotion. Whereas, you know, human sometimes has a negative context, but also an insanely positive context.
Yeah, I mean, AI, I mean, there's vast potential. But I think we need to see it for what it is. And I think we need to realize that it's a tool and it's not going to replace us. It's like you can't buy a hammer and expect it to build the house for you because it's not. So you can't just like lean on AI and think that it's going to produce content that's going to sound remotely human.
Right.
I mean, no.
I think about AI as like in a non-capitalist world, would AI even be a thing? Like, is AI a product of capitalism or is it a product of evolution?
Oh, that's a tricky question. I don't think I have the answer to that. But I'm thinking capitalism is in everything these days. Like, we can't escape it. We can try, but I don't think we can escape it. So we may as well just like play the game as good as we can. And the way I see capitalism is I don't necessarily like it, but profit isn't inherently bad either because we need to make money. We need to pay our bills. We live in a capitalistic society and we're just going to have to deal with that. But it's what we aim to do with the money that we make. You know, that's where the differentiator is, I think, between someone who's just profit driven and someone who actually cares about something outside of lining their own pockets.
And is that the difference between profit and purpose then? Profit, that like a values that align with profit are different than values that align with purpose?
Yeah, in a way, because I think while businesses exist to make money, that's a purpose of a business. But for a business that's more purpose-driven, it's more about what they can do with the profits they make than about the profits alone. So the more money we can get into the hands of the good people, the easier we can steer the world in the right direction. So I guess that's a way of rigging the game.
There was a phrase either in your email or in somewhere on your website where you talked about values-driven brands changing the world. And I think I'd love to know how that can be true. But then the sub-question that I have as well is like, is it okay to still want to change the world? Like, because like I remember years ago, like maybe 20 years ago, if you didn't have that drive to want to impact the world and change the world, what kind of human were you? Whereas now, like social media sometimes tends to like say, oh, you know, it's not okay to want to change the world now. So like sometimes.
Is it not? Oh God. Well, that's depressing.
Yeah. I thought that too.
I'd say like if we stop trying to make a better world and if we start thinking that there's no point, we can't make a difference anyways, then we're doomed, right? I mean, look at the state of the world right now. There's wars and genocides and climate crisis and racism and misogyny and all sorts of crap. And I mean, it just makes me want to curl up and die in a corner somewhere. But we can't, though, can we? Because if we do that, then what world are we going to be leaving behind for future generations? You know, I think they deserve a little bit better than us giving up, right? Yeah.
So what I love about that, though, is being able to have that positive kind of fuel to our creative fires and being able to then use our values for good. So where does a conversation around values start to show up in this process of going from who you've been to where you want to be?
Juicy question.
I don't think that.
Yes. I don't think that any one person or any one brand can change the world on their own. Like changing the world, it's like we're not God, any of us. It seems like a monumental claim, doesn't it? We want to change the world. But then most of us aren't Coca-Cola or Nike, right? Most of us are smaller businesses and you know, we have that purpose behind our brand still. And if we allow our values to lead the way, then we can be a part of something bigger. Then we can be a part of making sure that the impact we do make, you know, might be insignificant or it might feel insignificant, but if enough of us do that thing, then that creates a ripple effect so that we can pull in the right direction. So I think that's how we have to look at it, because it can feel too big and daunting if it's like, oh, I'm going to save the world.
Right.
No, I'm not, but I can help. I can do my bit.
Well, I think in the conversation around values too, it's like you look at, I want to change the world. I want to save the world. And then you're like, oh, just pick five words that define who you are. It's like, how does curiosity change the world? And you're just like, you have this giant gap in between those two statements. And yet, you know, there's got to be something more than just a list of words that are values.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, it's easy to just pick those words that could be anybody's brand values, right? And I think it stems from fear, to be honest. Most of us want to be liked, right? We don't want to upset anyone. We don't want conflict. And by being very bold and about being very honest when you choose those brand values that you want to lead with, essentially what you're doing is you're putting your head on the block. You know, by doing that, it's inevitable that someone somewhere is going to disagree with you. And what if they get angry? And what if they don't buy your thing? Or what if they might say, you know, bad things about you that you don't like? That is scary. So I don't blame people for going with the more sort of generic brand values.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's not going to help you stand out.
Yeah. There's one value that you have on your website that I absolutely love, and it's quiet rebellion. What does that mean to you?
Well, that's actually, I think that's my most important value and the one that says most about me as a human as well. I since I was a kid, I've always questioned rules that were put in place for no apparent reason. You know, I mean, yes, we have laws, we have, society needs some rules to function. But like, if we look at something like professionalism, I'm doing air quotes here for those who are listening. Who is it? Who gets to decide what professional looks like? Like, why am I somehow perceived as less skilled if I happen to use some spicy language or voice a political opinion on LinkedIn? You know, like, or if I don't wear a suit to client meetings. I don't, by the way. And so for the most part, I think the quiet rebellion for me is about questioning and challenging societal norms that just don't make any sense. You know, we just do them because we're supposed to do them. And I don't like that. And, and this is a bit of a tangent, but I don't do well when people tell me that I have to do things. Mm-hmm. And that goes for when I tell myself to do things too.
Oh, interesting.
So time blocking is not a good thing for me. It's not a good strategy.
I usually do time blocking well, like in a day, and then by the time the next day happens, I've already rebelled against it.
See? Yeah, this is what I do. Oh, I've tried time blocking. I've tried it because everybody says, oh, you should do that because it's really, really helpful. And I'm like, oh, you said you should. I don't want to do it. But I'm not shouty about it though. And that's where the quiet comes in, like the quiet rebellion, because I've never fit into that stereotype of someone who's on their soapbox or shouting from the rooftops. You know, I can even come across as quite shy and I'm quite quiet. So yeah, so the whole shouty thing was never my thing. And I also think that the more people that shout, the harder it becomes to get your message across. And I don't want to contribute and add to that noise. And so for me, it's more about leading with my values and putting some boundaries in place and actually sticking to them and showing through my actions that there's substance behind my word, right? And it's about reaching the right people with the right message.
I like that a lot too, because yeah. I think it helps to create nuance and there's context and there's room to be human again. Because yes. if we all showed up shouting in a room, I mean, it would just be so loud and it would just yeah. be noisy like the world sometimes feels right now.
Oh, I'd be out of there in just a hot second.
We're going to go to the park and feed the birds. See ya.
Yeah, can I join? I'd rather do that. But I, like I said, I think you can stand up for yourself and you can stand up for what you believe in without being shouty and obnoxious about it. And that's what I mean about sort of leading with your values. It's deciding what your boundaries are and what your non-negotiables are and what you will absolutely not do because it's wrong. And then just sticking to it. Because saying one thing and then doing a different thing is not going to get you credibility as a brand. So. Yeah. Once you set those boundaries, stick with them.
I'm sensing a theme here of knowing where your line is, knowing where your boundaries are. And it's just like, I never connected self-actualization or like that self-realization. I never connected that to boundaries before this conversation. And I think that's so powerful to see that connection.
I think you, unless if you don't know of her already, you should look up Randi Buckley. She's big on like the whole sort of boundaries. She's got this thing called Healthy Boundaries for Kind People, and she's amazing. So if you want to learn more about setting boundaries, mm-hmm. she's your person.
I love conversations like these because there's a lot of like awkward pauses and there's silence. I wasn't expecting to think this deeply. And I know that seems really weird to say, but like, I think that's where your magic really shines, is you bring like this really deep connection to like the human person that you're talking with.
Oh, wow.
And like, I don't know. I just like this. Yeah, it's just.
Thank you. That's touching, and also for the awkward silences and pauses. There's always editing software.
Exactly, but But I just really appreciate just the depth at which you think about like what you do. And you're giving me permission at the same time. And I hope that you're giving the audience permission to be willing to go deep into their values, to who they are and how they want to show up. I think that's incredibly powerful.
I think if someone comes to me and says, oh, what's the one thing I can do to make my brand stronger? I think it would be to really have a good think about the values and the things that you stand for. Because they inform so much of the rest of your brand.
So when we take that time to think, when we see the examples of what other people are doing, and we feel like that's the only way, as a quiet rebellion, how do you start showing people that there are alternate paths to expressing themselves and finding the people that they want to reach?
Well, the easiest way to do it is to, like, you don't have to make a big announcement or anything. Like, you can just start doing it, like, quietly, right? You can just like, okay, so everyone else is posting this or that, or everyone else is using, they're stabbing at pain points in their marketing. And I don't like that. So instead of saying, oh, I don't like that, so I'm not going to do that anymore, which is scary, right? Because then you're putting yourself out there. You can just stop doing it and start doing it in a way that feels good to you. And then as your confidence grows, because you've been courageous, like we spoke about courage before confidence earlier. And so once you've built up that confidence by being courageous and doing things differently, then you might start feeling confident enough to voice your opinions out loud and to be prepared for, you know, comments.
Yeah. I appreciate that a lot, especially the comments about if everything is a problem and we're all just looking for solutions, are we going to start making problems up? that's a question that I feel about that.
Like when I started my business, because I used to do a lot of general graphic design before I specialized in the branding and the strategic part of things. I used to do a lot of general graphic design works. I'd get all sorts of people coming in through my doors wanting just like, oh, I just want a business card. I don't need anything else. I don't have a logo or anything. You just make something that looks nice. And it's like, okay, so in the beginning, you kind of just have to do it. It's like sucking your soul out, but you have to do it because your bills need paying. But what I realized was I don't have to mention those jobs. So what I did was I just like started talking more about the kind of jobs and the kind of clients that I enjoyed working with and that I wanted more of. And that I just shut up completely about the ones that I didn't want more of. And that worked. It's like, okay, it's not an overnight thing. It's not like me saying, oh, starting tomorrow, I will not do any general graphic design work at all. I will just do this. It was more of a gradual. So it took a couple of years, but that was worth it to me because it was easing myself into it.
What I heard you just say too, Solveig, is I feel that it was a perfect example of niching without using the word niching.
Yes, I have a love-hate relationship with niching and the word niching. And I think I've niched in a way that's more true to me than to industry standards, but that's okay.
Right, because what I heard you say was you can niche by how you explain the types of people that you want to reach, but not necessarily have to change everything that you do on the back end.
Yeah,
I like that a lot. I think that feels a little bit more authentic and real to how most people live their experience as a business owner, as opposed to being so narrow that they work with like seven people, but no more than seven.
Yeah. Like there are so many people that say, oh, but you need to niche down. You need to find a specific type of client in a specific industry that because it's going to make your marketing effort so much easier. And I'm like, well, if I had to do that, I would die from boredom. Mm-hmm. So I would much, much rather niche down in terms of what I actually do for my clients, because there are more similarities really than you think between the different industries and the different types of businesses, and also by shared values and shared worldview. And, you know, I don't want to work with people who have values and opinions that are going to keep me up at night, like knowing that I've helped them improve their brand. Then I'm part of it. Don't want that.
I love that. So when you're going through this process of becoming your true you, how does that then lead to creating a standout brand?
Well, by being yourself, you're going to just automatically start to stand out, if that makes sense. It's like I said earlier, trying to pretend to be someone else is exhausting. So imagine if you give up that pretending and you free up that mental capacity, how much extra time are you going to have to spend on or energy are you going to have to spend on building your brand? And the added benefit of like dropping the mask is that there is just one you, right? So you've got millions of people who are doing what you do, but none of them are you. And so you could use yourself as a differentiating factor when you're a small business. I mean, this is different for the big, big corporations. But there's just something about owning your shit and showing up as who you are is automatically going to make you stand out from everyone else. Because most of the other brands are trying to copy someone else because they've seen that someone else has done well using a specific strategy or like using a specific look. And they think that, oh, if I just do what they did, then I will do well as well. But it's not like, it's not a one size fits all. You can just buy someone's template and then you'll have that same success. Sadly. Oh, that would be so easy.
Wouldn't that be great? Oh my gosh. I just feel so seen right now because I feel like a lot of my journey has been shoving myself aside and being like, what I think will be successful.
Hmm. And I think if you start to bring more of you into your brand, your unique sort of spin on things, that can set you apart in itself. Like I've deliberately brought in some of my past lived experiences into the way I work with my clients because I can see how it can benefit my clients. And those experiences are mine, and someone else might have similar experiences, but they don't have my experiences teamed with my specific expertise and my specific values. And it's that combination, you know, that's going to make it uniquely you. So
what's interesting too is like, I'm replaying in my mind, you have to take the courageous step and then confidence will follow. But then part of me is like, there's just this fear of like, what if people don't like me? What if people don't like who I am? And I think
people don't like you.
That is just one of those questions that sometimes people can't get past that. Sometimes I can't get past that.
I know. Oh, I know all about that. I was that kid that everybody picked on. I was that kid who sat in the corner of the room, scanning the room, reading the room, like reading people's facial expressions and body language to try and figure out what they were going to do next.
Yeah.
But that's actually the silver lining and things. I use my perception skills, like my skills of reading other people in the work that I do with my clients, because when my clients say, oh, but I don't know how you do it. It's some kind of magic. You just know what I want. And I haven't even said it. And I'm like, well, no, it's not magic. It's because I'm reading between the lines. I'm reading your body language. I can sense that there is something. And then I know the right questions to ask to get you to to open up about it. And so there's nothing woo about it. Like there's a lot of spirituality going around in the online business space. And I'm not that. I'm probably the least woo person in the entire universe. So when people say to me, oh, but you're so spiritual because you have this intuition. And I'm like, it's not though. It's backed by science and lived experiences. So bring your lived experiences into your brand. It's a good move, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I like that permission to connect to that younger version of myself too. Because I think our entire journey is an education into where we are. And there are patterns, and there are things that, I guess, patterns of success. Yes, patterns of failure, but, you know, we want to have some positivity here today. You know, it's focusing on those patterns of success over time to show, oh, you know, like maybe I am able to connect with people in a way that other people can't. Or, you know, maybe it is matters of perception and not just, oh, I meditate and I connect to the universe and
Yeah, but the thing is, you're always going to, like, when you meet new people, there are some people that you click with immediately and you think, oh, hey, we could be best friends and we can go and drink cocktails tomorrow. I feel like I've known you all my life kind of person. And then you have the people who you are just like, okay, what's with you? Okay, I don't think we're going to be friends. And then you're just like polite and nice, and then you never speak to them ever again. And I think that's the case with branding as well. You want to be portraying your true self so that you can attract those people that you really click with, so you don't have to put up with the people that are a bit meh.
Yeah, I like that. Because I think it brings also a connection to, it allows you to like know who you're going to connect with and trust that intuition in the moment of like, I really connect with this person. I feel like we'll do good work. Or if you're like, the intuition says, nah, there's something not right here. Being able to trust that, I think is powerful.
It is. And I don't think it's necessarily anything like woo. It's just that you're a human, you've lived and you've learned things along the way, and you have experiences that are now sort of coloring the experience that you are in right now. So,
how do you take all of this kind of lived experience, how you've packaged and present yourself now, and extrapolate it into the future? Like, are you a big picture thinker, like in 10 years, I'm going to be at X? Or are you more of like, you know, as long as I'm pointed in the right direction, I'll be okay?
Yeah, I'm more of that as long as I'm pointed in the right direction, I'll be okay. Because the world is changing so quickly now. I don't think it's even possible to plan 10 years ahead. I can wish for where I want to be in 10 years, but if the past sort of 4 or 5 years have taught me anything, it's like, okay, so you make plans and then life or the world is just going to find some way of fucking things up. Hello, yeah. COVID.
Yeah. And I think if there is one way to describe the learning journey of the last 4 years, it's learning how to shed that and be like, I have to learn to operate in uncertain times.
Yeah. And those are the brands that are going to do well. The brands that are going to be able to adapt and who aren't afraid to make adjustments along the way. Mm. The brands that are so set on their 10-year plan, they're going to struggle when there's a bump in the road. Look at Nokia and their, you know, the phone company. They decided that smartphones, that was just going to be, that wasn't going to be a lasting thing. So they were going to focus on what they did best, because, you know, it's safe. Where are they now?
Yeah. I think what came to mind when you said adaptability is I then immediately thought of resilience. What is the difference between adaptability and resilience? Because like resilience to me says, I will find a way to survive doing what I have always done. Like I see that as a thing that can keep us stuck. Whereas adaptability feels a little different to me.
Yeah, but can't we also look at resilience as just hanging in there and not giving up? You know, like grit.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily have to be a rigid thing. I like that. Could be more of a gritty sort of staying power.
I appreciate your willingness to dive into words and meanings and things like that. Because
I love this kind of conversation. Yeah. I really do, and I think it makes for the best podcast episodes when you just free flow conversations like this. Yeah.
What does the word mean? Oh my gosh. Well, we've touched on the meaning of just about every word possible now. Is there something about brands and branding that you're really excited to explore next?
I think it's got to be the more sort of human aspect of branding. I think brands are going back to the roots almost. And I'm really excited for that because I think it's good for the world to have a little bit more humanity. Because, yeah, goodness knows there's enough crap. So if we can just like build brands that respect our fellow human beings, thank you very much. Amen. Done.
One way that I was really impressed by was something that you shared recently on Instagram, where you shared the free library, the little community library that you put together.
And you saw that.
Yeah. When I saw that, I knew immediately that I was going to enjoy our time together, because it was just such a beautiful way to like connect to other people and to show what you care about. And books are amazing. And I just feel like
so amazing.
That was just a beautiful celebration of humanity right there.
I love Little Free Library, the whole movement. So it's really nice. I wasn't sure if people here would like use it. Would they get it? Because people here are a little bit slow. They're not early adopters of anything. Mm-hmm. So I was like, will people actually use it? Or is it just going to be a place for me to dump my books that I've finished reading? And people are using it. I can like, it's right across the road from my house. So I see it from my living room and my kitchen. And every day I see someone like opening the door, going in, grabbing a book. There's kids, there's adults. And it's like, it just warms my heart.
Have you had a chance to talk with anyone who's gone in there?
Yeah. There's neighbors that I know. And we often like, if I'm outside in the garden and someone goes in, I'll just stroll over and say hi. And yeah.
Well, as we wrap up our time together, is there a bit of wisdom you would like to leave people listening to this right now? Maybe they're like me and they're like, I don't know how to bring myself into my brand. Or maybe they're like, I've got it all figured out.
Okay. And I think this goes for life in general and for building your brand, by the way, but if there are like the famous last words, it's okay to be you, and it's okay if not everyone likes you, as long as the people that matter do. And I think it took me until my 40s to realize that.
There's the mic drop moment right there. Boom. Well, final question for you. Is there a book, podcast, or resource that you can't get enough of right now?
And this is the type of question I hate, because I'm like, one?
Well, you can have a list.
I have three. I managed to stick with three. So podcasts, I've really been enjoying listening to a podcast called What Works by Tara McMullen. Mm-hmm. She's kind of rethinking work and business and leadership and kind of how not to lose yourself in the midst of it all. So I think it ties in very nicely with this podcast. I think you might like that. And people who are listening to this podcast, I think, will find that interesting. And then, of course, there's Rachel Allen, who was on your show a few episodes ago, who is the reason why I found this podcast. Literally everything that comes out of that woman's brain blows my mind. And book-wise, I keep coming back to this one book called No Plan B by Heather Thorkelson. And in her own words, it's a handbook for incurable entrepreneurs and other rebellious souls.
That sounds
excellent. You can guess why I like that, right?
Thank you so much for listening to Getting Work to Work and this conversation with Solveig Petsch. I was struck by several powerful moments throughout our conversation, but one in particular stopped me in my tracks. It's where she said, it's okay to be you, and it's okay if not everyone likes you, as long as the people that matter do. Whew. As a people pleaser, I want to do everything and anything to be liked by as many people as possible. But what would happen if I focused my intention not on everyone, but on the people that truly matter to me and I matter to them? How would my life change? If you're a people pleaser and you struggle with this too, I hope you'll spend some time as I will reflecting on the statement and how you can take small steps in bringing your true self into your work. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.